Step into the wealth elevator and join our 12,000 plus member community who have passively invested over $200 million to acquire over $2.1 billion in commercial real estate. Sign up by going to thewealthelevator.com/club, and here we go.
On today's show, we're going to be helping the socially awkward folks like myself who are self-proclaimed introverts try and be a little bit smoother and a little bit more effective in terms of networking and just getting along with people at work. I am bringing on an IT guy turned social coach on today's podcast to give us some pointers and some things to be aware of. So if you guys hear me talking about a lot of being an accredited investor and finding deal flow is mostly about networking and getting to know other passive investors so that you can become a better passive investor yourself. But to do that, you have to make relationships, organic, real relationships with other high net worth accredited investors. A lot of this, again, like I say all the time, it's not going to be at your local RIA or at the free internet Facebook groups or other forums out there, because those groups are typically filled with guys who are trying to make their first $100,000, $200,000 net worth. But how do you, when you finally get in the right room, like maybe we do a simple passive cash flow outing, maybe I come to San Francisco or Seattle, when you finally get in a group with our tribe, how do you make the most of it? I love the soft skills we're going to be talking about this today, and I hope you guys enjoy. I'm talking to Ryan here, one of my accredited investors, been in a bunch of deals with me. He came down to the Hui Mastermind retreat in Honolulu, Hawaii last year. Why don't you give us a little quick take on what did you like about it? And then I'll give you the big news, man.
So I loved it last year. I can't wait to do it this year. So basically these people, I could relate to them a lot more. They were all hard workers. They understood the long-term play. They had the capital to back up what they wanted to do. Everyone in their group had their own little experiences and experiments going on. So some people are looking into tiny homes. Some people are looking maybe into office space. Some people are doing still single family homes, and others are doing syndications. So you get a very broad range of what everyone's doing. And it rarely intersects with exactly what I'm doing. I would be doing, like, for instance, what I brought to the table last year was I had just gotten into an island syndication. So I wanted to bring details to everyone there, and you can share your experiences and people can ask you questions that you may not have thought of, and because they have that experience as well.
Yeah. And that's the thing, folks, like our group is, I think, the only group out there that's pure passive investor groups. Most real estate, I stopped going to real estate conferences because I started to realize they're all fake. Either they're trying to sell some guru's $30,000 course, or they're just a bunch of newbie syndicators trying to get in the game and, yeah, just on some podcast or something like that.
That's what I noticed. This was an experienced group. A lot of them had already been in some syndications. Some were just getting started off, which is fine too, but I got help on both ends. So I could see what others were doing from the get-go, and I realized that they had capital. They had the desire to just be passive. And then I saw, obviously, people ahead of me who had been doing it longer, who had been in more deals. And I could peek around the corner and see what I should be looking out for, what's next. And that's mainly what I like. I like to get that notion of what's next and how to look ahead.
I'll be doing the same thing. We'll be filtering investors, and only those who meet the certain criteria of pure passive investors will be getting into this year's event. But I got some bad news, man.
What's that?
You're not going to be able to come to Hawaii this year because all that's been going on, the whole pandemic thing.
So you just don't want me to come?
No, not... You and everybody else are going to need to stay at home and attend this thing virtually. But yeah.
Well, how is that going to work?
I'm in a bunch of other masterminds, and okay. We are also things I pay 25 grand. I'm in a few of these, and I'm taking the best practices from those events. The reason why I spend that much money to go to those type of events, and I'm sure why you came to Hawaii, was so that you could build a relationship with other people. So I've seen ways to do this virtually, right? Using okay. Lot of Zoom breakout rooms, but I have a lot of work that I have to do to bring the right people in, ask people the right questions, to curate the right speaking slots as we go around this event.
Okay.
It will be virtual this year, Martin Luther King, January 2021. It'll be probably a couple days, no more than 6 hours a day in the first half of the day, since I know how things are hard. And this is what's nice about an in-person meeting that we won't be able to do is you get to detach, and it was the time at the bar, it was the time hanging out, that was the cool time.
That was.
But we're gonna try and mimic this as much as possible. And I would say, like, most online events are just like death by speakers, a bunch of PowerPoints, but the majority of the interaction is going to be, you guys are going to be talking to other members, either on a one-to-one basis like this or in small groups, no more than 12 people in a group. So you're going to really get to know each other personally.
I like that. I think, yeah, okay. So you're going to have breakout rooms with smaller groups of people. I think that's going to increase the focus as well. I think it's easy to get caught up in trying to talk to everyone when there is like a larger group at a big table. I noticed that. So I think that is going to be helpful.
Yeah. And that's the hard thing about even in-person events, right? Like and most of us in our group are introverts. You're an introvert, right? Too.
I want to be. Yeah.
Yeah. You're an evolved introvert. So what I noticed being an introvert too, is like when you find somebody cool to talk with, you spend a lot of time with them and you don't talk to everybody else. So these breakout rooms, how I'm going to facilitate them is going to be cool, because it's going to give you enough time, you know, 10 minutes to interact with somebody, get a good vibe, see if you want to interact with them again in the future, take that content. But it's also going to maximize your time so you can interact with a lot of people in this.
Yeah, event. That's true. I think so how will it be organic? Like I think in person, it would just be like randomly, you would meet some people and see if you would connect with them. How is it going to work here? Are there going to be like groups that you choose to be in? Are there going to be focus groups or?
Yeah, so I'm going to do a little bit of random matchmaking for sure. But for the most part, I want to give people somewhat of a guideline of, you know, what to talk about instead of just popping you guys into a group. Because that's a little awkward, right? Here is the start of the Family Office Ohana Virtual Mastermind, the Bubble 2021 is what I'm going to call it. Okay. I'm starting to build a list of different topics here. This list will obviously grow as the weeks go by, as we get closer to the event. But there's very common topics that I see coming up, right? The guy who has a high net worth, doesn't have very much liquidity, but has a lot of money in their home equity or their 401k. How are they taking money out of their 401k slowly so they leak it out so their AGI doesn't come up over $300,000? That was something we talked about this past year that I would say half of the people in the room, and I'm sure half of the people in the virtual mastermind, are having the same issues. So getting those people together. And for those people who don't have those issues, we'll put them in another group for general networking or infinite banking. I don't know if you've set yours up yet, but that was a big thing for a lot of people, hardly setting that up. And everybody has a different situation in terms of net worth, how many kids they have, where they are with their career, what does their liquidity look like, how much money do they net at the end of the year, and what do they want a deployment strategy for investments are going to be. So yes. When people sign up and they apply, one of the biggest things is I'm going to have a pretty long on-take form so that I know where everybody's net worth, their liquidity, what problems they're having, so that when we go to the itinerary, I can match people up specifically in the right groups. Gotcha. Or with the right people.
That makes sense. That's going to be really helpful.
It's going to take a lot of planning.
Yeah, sure. That's a lot of work on your end.
There's a common amount of problems and issues people have. And for example, infinite banking, there's some experts in the crowd. There's some people that have never heard of it. The experts I'm going to hook up with, I'm going to have some people in my current mastermind to play elders and bring up some people that are in the middle. But I'm going to jump to the breakout room with the complete newbies and teach it from the start. So this format will continue throughout the weekend.
Okay. Yep, that makes
sense. Might even do a little bit of Texas Hold'em. This is a fun game or something like that.
That would be awesome. I think I was going to say, like, the activities in the games, especially in person last year, those were great. That really helped start talking to people and just feel people out, at least in terms of not just real estate, but just in what type of person they are.
Yeah, it's going to be a super sleek use of Google Documents. And like, because one thing I can do is you have your just totally random networking and you have these more specific itinerary based topic discussions. But in the middle, you have this form of maybe there's different breakout rooms that people want to learn about or talk to other people's in the peers. So I can build a Google document with the breakout room, breakout one, rename it to 401ks, breakout two, rename it to taking money out of your retirement account. Breakout three to legacy planning. What are you doing in your irrevocable trust or trust? What kind of caveats are you putting in there? Who wants to talk about oil and gas or land conservation easements, right? And just a general hallway.
Yeah, I think like that, to your previous point, that was important for me is like tax strategies. Since I'm single, there are no kids. So it's, I don't get a whole lot of tax help. Those were great strategies for me last year. And I'd really like to see and check in, what have people been doing about them? Did anyone go for it? I know that we were still researching oil and gas last year. And then obviously, yeah, the hallway too. I think it might be good to force people to rotate into the hallway every so often, to just relax and take a break from learning and absorbing information at least.
Yeah, and in the new version of Zoom right now, you have the ability to navigate yourself through the breakout room. So if you're not, okay. If something's not working for you, you can move around however you want. We'll leave that option open for people. But going back to the taxes, right? Like the using real estate professional status, 750 hours with active participation, and using all these passive losses you're getting via cost segregations and bonus depreciation from these deals, you understood it, right? You're there in person, you got the concepts. So what we would probably do for you now is put you in a group with the experts that get it, and you guys have passive losses to use, and then put you in the people that are on the same level so you can, guys can talk shop. I might stick with the new people and teach them this concept of the simple passive cash flow gravy train, as I've trademarked it.
Yeah, because that was me last year, actually. I had no idea about it. I'd never heard of these things, and so I was new. And now that I know about it, and I've actually been looking around, it'd be great to even get more information about people who have already done it.
We've got people in the group have gotten short-term rentals. They let us enact their real estate professional status so they can offset their passive losses to the ordinary income. You, my friend, are single, so it's going to be hard for you to do it, but we'll connect you and maybe the other single people too.
Even if they're not single, I think it's still useful. I think, yeah, I can still find relatable people. And again, the big part for me is probably, I guess, the hallway. It might be helpful to have a room to just talk about, like a general room. There's no forced topic, but it's also not like a hallway where you just kind of hang out and talk about like the weather. I don't know. But really a big draw for me is like hearing, like for instance, I think one person was doing like Airbnbs with tiny homes. And I was like, that's awesome. And he was just wrapping it up. So I'd love to connect with him again and say, oh, how'd that go? How's it looking now with COVID? Things like that.
Yeah, and I'm going to be going out to certain members on specific topics that they're doing like that, and they can need a breakout room also. That way they can work their membership to their admission rate a little bit lower on a scholarship. So that's a big thing I'm doing in the family office, Ohana, is I'm having people join up for another year who are more senior, kind of helping the event go. So it's just not me doing it all. We're going to definitely have helpers here, but like more facilitators too. I'm open to that also. Gotcha. We're trying to build this community here of high net worth accredited investors to on the road to financial freedom.
One thing I'd also like this year is, I'm not married, but I do have a girlfriend, and she wants to get into real estate. She likes the idea of like mailbox money, passive income.
That's why she has you, man. That's money right there. You just go to work every day.
And... yeah, maybe it is, but she
not for you. You're just ordinary.
Yeah. I am. It's more passive on her part. But yeah, I think it's beneficial here. Do you think there would be, for people who do have spouses or significant others, are there going to be rooms for them or can they join?
That's a great idea. And what I know I'm going to do is we're going to have a topic called reluctant spouse syndrome, where I'm going to give the high level, very quick presentation. But again, the format of this thing is to break out into a room, talk story, get best practices from the other members. Okay. I'm going to pull people and find those people in the group that have gotten their spouse over the hump. And from that means they maybe talked to them for 2,000 hours and they finally get it. Or they found some kind of quick medium, right? Like me, okay. I don't have my spouse co-sign any of my documents because I don't want to waste my time every single time I do this. So I found the happy medium. But gotcha. It's different for everybody. And it I is, think yeah. In that situation, you're going to be able to talk to people who have gotten over the situation or you got in going through that hard struggle with your significant other going through it. We'll probably allow, maybe that might be a good evening time event where we have the spouses join us and they can interact with the other spouses too. When we did the in-person thing, there were a few couples that came that brought their reluctant spouse along because it just happened to be in Hawaii and they got shipped to go to Hawaii. When they met a lot of the other investors, such as yourself, and they got it, right? They saw how our very high level group did this. And it wasn't just about making money. It was about creating a legacy and wealth building. They got it. And I think that to have the spouses come in and interact, mix it up with the other spouses and folks like yourself, I think that's gold. And we'll definitely try and do stuff like that.
Great. Yeah, that'll help. Because right now, she only hears me talk. And so I think it's refreshing to maybe get her some more exposure in terms of more experienced people, other people who are also getting their feet.
Yeah, that'll probably be the good cocktail event for sure.
Cool.
Any other questions, man? I think this is going to be a super fun event. Martin Luther King weekend. So you've got that Monday off.
Okay.
But we'll probably do it on a Saturday and Sunday in the first half of the day.
Awesome. Awesome. And then how are you going to, because typically, like when everyone was in Hawaii, everyone was in the same time zone. So how are you going to coordinate everyone to be together when they live in different areas?
Well, I'm going to suck it up and try and wake up extra early and probably start it at like really early just so that we can stay on that first half of the day. For yourself, I think most of us are in the mountain or Pacific time zone centrally located. So to kind of start on in the morning and then go to a little bit after lunchtime. But so you have the time to do whatever you need to do for the rest of the day. But sure. I think it is important to break away from your normal day-to-day and immerse yourself. That's the big thing is immersion.
Yeah.
But I think it's cool this time that you don't have to get on a plane and go. And what I'll probably do also is build an itinerary of these different topics that we are talking about. So if something doesn't pertain to you or you want to cherry pick, you got to go do the laundry or something. You got to run errand, right? Mr. Ordinary Income Man. You got to do something.
I got to go look at work stuff.
Yeah, you got to go do work stuff. You can cherry pick when you want to do that so you don't miss out something that you really want to learn about.
And that's huge. That is.
Yeah. But I think when people realize the quality of people in this group, if they haven't already, their eyes are going to really open, just like how yours did when you came.
That was huge for me. I think that's when it became really evident that you've put a lot of work into creating the group. And it's everyone wants you to win and everyone's on a team together and everyone's going to help you out. Yeah, it's a great group.
I'm going to do my best trying to filter the right people into the group. There's always a chance. Not many people make it get past my filters, but I think this is where.
Am I going to get past your filter?
You're going to make it in. You've been around a while. I know you personally. But, I think this is where I rely on my community, right? We all need to be watchdogs. Potentially a bad actor or a shady character who could come in, could infiltrate the group. But for the most part, everybody are pure passive investors. They're all working to build their own personal family office. And it's more of an abundance mindset.
That's what I felt.
Competitive. Yeah. We'll send this out to folks and hopefully they learned from your good questions. You gave me a good one. That was good. But any last words, my friend?
That's all I got. Thanks a lot, Lane.
This is a story about a dude named Lane. He moved to the mainland and bought one place to stay. And then one day he went and tried to rent them out. And then he became one real investor man.
Hey, Simple Passive Cash Flow listeners. Today, we are going to be talking to Brady Helpin, who is a ex-IT professional, but he is focusing on teaching other IT professionals and other smart guys the soft skills like clear communication, responsiveness, empathy, and we're going to be doing a deep dive on this. So this is going to be a good one for those of you guys who have day jobs, which is most of you. A lot of folks in the Simple Passive Cash Flow Nation are high paid professionals. You guys realize that your time is better spent at your day job going after that next promotion. It ain't going to be forever. Most of you guys, I noticed, can get financially free in 5 to 10 years, but it's definitely time better spent there than screwing around with some burr property or your fourth or fifth turnkey rental. That's for sure. But Brady, thanks for jumping on, man.
Of course.
Yeah, so a lot of our groups, a lot of engineers in our investor club, for some strange reason, maybe because I am. But I guess, why don't you take us through what is like the biggest mistakes that you see other IT professionals, or let's just put it in general, like smart people, right? Dentists, doctors, they need to have bedside manner. What are the biggest mistakes that you see, just to start us off, and we can maybe isolate a few of these for within this next podcast?
Yeah, I would say the biggest thing that tends to be the root problem here is when you get really good in any particular field, you start to learn the jargon and use the jargon, but you don't necessarily keep a sense of what the other person in a conversation knows and doesn't know. And too often, particularly for engineers and other process-oriented individuals, we tend to think in terms of the tasks that we have to do. We tend to think a little bit more in acronyms and other terminology. And it's comfortable for us. And we don't go through the effort to make ourselves uncomfortable enough to translate our jargon into something the other person can understand. And when we don't do that, it tends to break rapport and make for rather stilted conversations, short conversations, not a lot of popularity within the workplace, etc.
Yeah, it just goes to show that the person you're talking to on the other end, they are not an expert as you may be. And it comes across as, number one, you don't have empathy over the other person in their shoes. And number two, it could just be like you breaking.
It's the idea of almost like a lack of sensitivity. You could make an argument, in fact, that it is almost inconsiderate to spout jargon at another person who you didn't check to see whether or not they would even understand the jargon. You made an assumption about it, and then you launch in, and you get a lot of hurt feelings that way. You get a lot of ruffled feathers. You get a lot of conflict in a workplace where you might come across as condescending or as an asshole or whatever. There's any number of extra elements that come into play because all the person on the receiving end has to go on is the words that you're saying and the tone you're using. And if you're really short and succinct about it and almost impatient about it because it seems obvious to you and you're making all of these assumptions, you can have a completely different reaction from them than what you would be expecting.
It's just, what is the acronym? Picnic, problem not in computer, found in seat, or something
Yeah,
like
or PEBCAC, problem between monitor and chair or something like that.
yeah, what are things that are people to be on the lookout that they do? Because there's a lot of smart people that listen to this podcast, and sometimes it can definitely, a lot of introverts too, but I think sometimes the smarter you get, the less self-aware you are of these simple things.
Yeah, and I think about it as a lot of people will make the assumption that to go to the effort of translating for somebody else is something that somebody who's more extroverted would go through. One of the reasons why I suspect the proportion of individuals that have a trouble with clear communication, with avoiding jargon, tends to come from like engineers and IT people and other really technical industries, or because there's probably a somewhat higher proportion of introverts there than extroverts. And a common misconception is that you've got to be extroverted in order to get along with other people and establish rapport. But interestingly, somebody who is an introvert actually has a lot more empathy for somebody else. They just don't necessarily know how to tap into it. So the effort that you go through to translate for somebody else is actually easier on an introvert than for an extrovert in a way, because you can internalize the emotion of what the other person's feeling. You just don't know how to do that.
They're just not an introvert, just tends to be listening or not talking all the freaking time.
And then when you want to say something, oftentimes, again, in technical fields, you want to be precise about what you're saying. But there's so much effort on being precise that you don't necessarily keep in mind what they're going to understand or not understand about your precision. Oftentimes, translating it in a way that loses a tiny bit of the meaning but becomes much easier to understand is a lot better than giving the precise terminology or acronym to what is happening or what this thing is, and it goes over somebody's head instead. So it's the main thing that stops introverts, I think, is the initial effort it takes to think not only about the other person, but then to go out of your way to accommodate them. because that in a way is what you're doing. You're accommodating somebody else explicitly to translate something that you take for granted into words or ideas that the other person will understand easily. It's well received when you do this, but it takes a lot of effort. There's a hump to get past.
And sometimes it's just an ego thing. A good example of this is, I guess in our industry, we make a lot of fun about doctors, because doctors in our realm are horrible investors. They're really smart people, but they're absolutely the worst investors. They invest in some of the worst stuff. And it's funny when I get a doctor that is clued in on this truth that, you know, but you see some doctors who are very intelligent people. And I don't really want to isolate the doctors completely. It's every smart profession. You get a smart person and they come into a realm such as investing and they're a complete noob about it, newbie. And yet they believe that they can learn it like that, or they already know, have a pretty good understanding. But part of it is ego and being able to start at the infancy stage, realize that you don't know what you don't know, just stage one, and then realize that there is a whole bunch of other stuff you need to learn to even start to build an understanding.
We work with hardworking professionals looking to opt out of investments for the clueless. I mean, mainstream investing. We work with people we have a direct relationship while enjoying higher returns and a quicker path to financial freedom. I personally moved my endorsement from turnkey rentals to syndications as my net worth has grown. However, the downside of many of these deals is that you need at least $50,000 to invest, and the frequency of deals that meet my criteria is sporadic. Check out my article at simplepassivecashflow.com/ofund and learn how I always have cash on hand by using the American Home Preservation Fund as part of this 1-2 punch to be ready for a great deal while still making a double-digit return. I have been investing in AHP since 2016. AHP is a crowdfunding solution to the mortgage crisis in America, where collectively the fund and investors like you pull their money together and get great bulk discounts on distressed mortgages. It's a business model that I think gets stronger should a bump in the economy come, because this is where there will be even more distressed inventory for AHP to purchase. The American Home Preservation Fund aims to keep people in their homes so you can make a 10% return while making a positive social impact. Invest in as little as $100 by going to ahpservicing.com/investors. And if you want the free Burn Zone book and learn about George Newberry's story, please send me an email at lane@simplepassivecashflow.com.
I like to buy stuff.
Well, that's a liability.
Maybe talk to us. I'm sure you run a lot of boot camps with folks. What can you say about people with that type of problem? Because that one's a little harder to work around, right?
It is more fundamental. I wouldn't necessarily say that it's harder, because it sounds deceptively simple to avoid jargon, but in practice, it's so much harder because there is the value system that somebody holds internally that really ultimately dictates whether or not they go through the effort to avoid jargon. So it is deceptively simple, but quite difficult to actually change in practice, because they have to change themselves, their values. And when we talk about something like ego, it's much the same idea. There's a fundamental way that we view ourselves that you can't be on autopilot with. You can't just let that be and carry on with the day-to-day stuff and expect that not to influence everything you do and all of your results in your life. It all comes down to your value system, your viewpoint, and how willing you are to change that. And I cover a topic that I consider a difference. I did not create these concepts. These actually came from a book, Carol Dweck, Mindset, that I would recommend would be good reading for people. But there's this concept of growth versus fixed mindset. That is the technical terminology, which is to basically say, when we talk about smart people, when we talk about educated people, when we talk about people that are really good at this, we are labeling them. We are labeling them, though, with fixed attributes. If you are not smart, then you must be dumb. So there's a lot of those backhanded compliments that tend to start coming in, where you go, somebody gets 100% score on a test and you go, congratulations, you're a genius. And then they don't really feel great about that. They actually feel pressured now and nervous, because if they don't get 100 on the next test, then what does that say about them? So that's that idea of a fixed mindset. But growth is about the effort, about the journey that we're taking, about where we are trying to reach with our effort and our energy and our focus. And that's what I help to craft. And it correlates with ego because I put that on a spectrum between solution focused and ego focused as two ends of a spectrum. And the boot camp that you mentioned briefly teaches throughout those 6 weeks a recurring theme of being solution focused, because you can enjoy praise. You can enjoy the nice things that come from, you know, it feels good to know that I have this PhD. It feels good to know that I hold this kind of salary, this kind of prestige. You can enjoy those pleasures, but don't let them affect your decisions. The decision should be influenced by a solution approach. What is the solution that I want to do? If you're unhappy with something in your life right now, if you're unhappy with something in your career, in the workplace that you want to change, it is infinitely better to treat that as a problem that has a solution than to react from your ego, to react from your emotions, to react from how other people should treat you because you have accomplished X, Y, Z.
So we talk a lot about like handling rejection and confrontation. Mm-hmm. And that kind of reminds me about when you go into a confrontation or some kind of conflict that, again, like you mentioned, it's all about the, what is the solution that you want to the outcome. Mm-hmm. Maybe you can go more into detail about that.
When you're focusing on a solution with a conflict, it tends to dampen down your emotional reactions from a place of ego. So if you're giving, we can call it investment advice. If you're giving investment advice to somebody and they're not listening to you, they're not taking your advice. You'd alluded to like doctors might be proportionally higher at being terrible investors kind of thing. And if there's ego involved and they're rejecting your advice and they don't want to do the investments that are a good recommendation or coming up in group conversations because they think this is going to work better, you're in a conflict. And as an expert in investment, or if we talk about the engineer, or if we even talk about the doctor, imagine a doctor with a patient and the patient is going, yeah, I know I need to exercise more, ha ha. And they're brushing off the doctor's advice. There's that prick to our pride as an expert that somebody's not taking our advice. But if we maintain our focus on the solution, we will react and respond differently to that person in the room, differently than if we reacted out of hurt pride, wounded pride, offense, etc. So that's where that kind of ties in. The main thing that we want to focus on from the solution is mastery over our own emotion, not letting our emotions rule us.
Yeah, I think an example that I see, I personally go through a lot is I tell people, you know, if you do the math, investing via a retirement fund doesn't make too much sense because you got to wait till you're 7 years old to get the money. You're in a lower tax bracket today. Tax brackets are going up in the future. And when you invest via retirement funds, you don't get any of the passive losses to potentially offset your W-2 income. When people, I guess, they go the other way, I could probably be like, whatever, man. If you're the expert, you freaking do it. Do whatever you want. That's the prick, right, that you're mentioning. So maybe walk me through it, how I should work through that solution or get to the solution. Because I guess the solution, I want them to do what makes sense, I guess.
I think what this boils down to is that there's a different concept that I can intermingle in here. And that's the idea of separating the two kinds of power. Because when we think of power, we just think of one kind of power, which is social power, influence over another person. And if you look at your goal or your objective as trying to get somebody else to do something, then you're already setting yourself up potentially for failure because all you can do is influence them. You can't control them. But the thing that you can control is personal power. And that is your reactions to something. That is your decisions on how you're going to respond, how you're going to move forward. So you feel that prick of wounded pride. You exert personal power by choosing to adopt a solution approach rather than reacting from hurt pride. That's the first thing. You can control your reaction. You can't control what they decide to do, though. So now we're talking about social influence. What I would actually say to you in this situation and what I usually would say to somebody else in a similar situation of what do? I want them to do this. Reevaluate your true goal, your true objective, because your true goal and objective should be something you have control over, not something you can only influence. Your goal should be something you can actually reach and guarantee that you can reach. That's where confidence comes from. That's where that certainty in your path and what you're going to do comes from. So your goal could be to exhaust all options you can take to influence this person to take sound advice and take a sound approach. That could be the objective, because if they listen to you at some point and then they follow your advice, that's fantastic. That's a great outcome. But you still win even if they don't, because you've taken all logical steps to try and coach them the right way to follow the right advice and the right steps. So you will still win because you could control that. You could control all of the suggestions and pathways that you could illuminate for them. It's up to them to use their personal power to decide to take your advice or not.
So whether it's a doctor teaching about diet and exercise, getting them to make that path, having somebody get their retirement funds out of the clutches of the government, it's not about the other person. It's about me exhausting all my options to
get
there. If not, be okay with it. Is that kind of the answer?
Yeah, because if you think about it through to a logical conclusion, you can end up with doctors that become suicidal. If you really think about it in a life and death struggle kind of situation, you got somebody having diagnosed with cancer and they have to take certain medications or go through certain treatments. And then you have the patient refuse to take those treatments. And the doctor in that room is going to go, you are most likely going to die then. And if you keep your focus on saving that life, which you can only influence, you can't control that. You get somebody that now has a lot of baggage to take around and try and process. But if their goal actually is to make sure that they educate as much as they can to say, hey, look, these are your risks, though. You're an adult. You have to decide for yourself what you're going to do. But I need you to know at least what's at stake. And if they keep their focus on that, they can control that. They don't have unresolved baggage to fight through. They knew they did everything they could to try and save this person. Now, it's a life or death struggle situation that really exemplifies the emotion that we go through, but it really also illustrates the grounding we should pursue, because you can't borrow other people's troubles.
Now, here's another example that comes up a lot. I actually have a big article that I update from time to time about the reluctant spouse syndrome, where an investor has a spouse that is a partner in life that isn't quite on board with getting off the beaten path of traditional investing and not buying a house to live in. You guys can check this out at simplepassivecashflow.com/spouse. But so let's walk through this. Somebody wants to go into an investment or maybe not buy a house to live in, maybe rent for a while. And it clashes with the other person. And to me, the worst case scenario is where when I throw my hands up in the air and I say, sorry, man, that's your problem. It's the spouse is disinterested in a way, but holding to their truth. Now, how would you navigate that specific scenario?
In that case, I would say hold to your truth. There's a fine line, and here's where a lot of people who are technical but not necessarily empathetic, or externally empathetic, I should say, visibly empathetic, will struggle, because it is a fine line. You can have the same content, but the message and the wording and the tone changes everything. We're talking about establishing rapport. We're talking about already if the timing isn't right, or if there's a personal conflict that's preventing this person from moving forward with something you think is a good idea. We've already covered what that looks like. It's not a good fit. If you can't prioritize this, then it's not going to work out. You're going to make a different decision. All I can do is give you an educated sense of what your options are. And if you don't pick that up and run with it, I can only give you your options. I can only educate you. I can't force you to do something against your wishes, right? You can't control them. But there's a distinction between throwing up your hands and going, whatever, I can't tell you what to do. There's a dismissal to it. There is a reaction to the emotion that is coming into the tone and to the wording. because your emotions at that exact moment have the better of you rather than the other way around. There's no solution there, because the solution is whether or not you've exhausted all options. And if you throw your hands up in the air before you've exhausted all options, then you have failed something that you actually have direct control over. You can exhaust those options. And what that ends up looking is just illuminating to them what would be a process that they can, should you change your mind, or here's an article you should read, or here's a podcast episode you should listen to that really talks about this kind of concept and this kind of concern that you're running into right now, and how do you reconcile it? Like, you can provide them options for them to come back later. It takes little effort on your part, but it's a solution approach. It's something that you can offer them that whether they take it or not doesn't matter. But the delivery is establishing that rapport. The delivery is making that ally on the other side of the communication, rather than using a rejection from emotion. If you have mastery over your emotions, you can address that situation a myriad number of ways that gives them a good feeling at the end of the day, even if it doesn't financially work out for them to want to do the investment advice, for them to purchase this, to do that, whatever. And this is true for doctors with advice. This is true for engineers with unreasonable deadlines and a manager breathing down their neck. Like, no matter what conflict you're looking at, you can react emotionally, or you can feel the emotion, recognize it for what it is, ask yourself, but what am I going to do about it? Because reacting just from the emotion, you go, I can't do anything about it, and you just throw your hands up in the air. But you ask yourself, after you recognize the emotion, what can I do about this? And you'll have a couple of things usually that spring to mind that you can still do. And you can close the book too. You can be like, hey, if it doesn't feel like it's a good fit, I can't change your mind on that. Here's some resources for you to check out.
Or you know where to find me. If continuing down this road is going to ruin the relationship even further, maybe that's the smart choice. Circumstance.
And to that point, if you're giving investment advice, you're not a family therapist. You're not a relationship therapist, a marriage counselor, or anything like that. So also recognizing where our strengths are and where they're not.
I will say this is a common story. It's something like innate, like infinite banking, using whole life insurance to bank from yourself. It's a little complicated topic, and some spouses will just dig their feet in and say no. And the kind of the more financially minded spouses, you know, say, I'm frustrated. I'm trying to teach them about this. They don't even listen. They don't even watch the damn webinar to learn about it. And they say no. And then they just let it cool down for a few days. And they said, yeah, they said, just do it. So sometimes that can be the path forward too. This is just me being an observer of other people, yeah, to see how it works.
And when we see situations like this that we want to influence, there is a strategy we can still employ. If you see that as a recurring theme, and you can recognize you don't have the control to change them or change their situation, but you do have networking partners, referral partners, individuals that specialize in maybe persuasion and conversational therapy or whatever, right? Some kind of sense of you're having a financial conflict. How do you resolve these kinds of financial conflicts with your spouse? Because if you got somebody that really wants to do it, and then the spouse is in the way, then that person that really wants to do it is not going to go against their spouse, but they would love to figure out a way that they can communicate differently with their spouse to maybe persuade them. That is certainly something they would be interested in. That isn't necessarily your strength. But there are people that do that. And that's where the idea of understanding what you can and cannot work, what's your expertise and what isn't your expertise, plays a crucial role. And by offering, even if the connection doesn't work out, just the offer of connecting them with that kind of resource to help them find a solution for themselves wins you that kind of rapport.
I think the goal is the rapport, right? And going back into the example of an IT solution where it's very binary, you as the expert know what the problem is, and it can be very frustrating, especially in that case. Switching gears here a little bit, I'm big on building networks of other high net worth investors, getting in the room of the right people, which is usually not the local RIA and the free groups online who are just more about wholesaling and flipping and getting their first $100,000, $500,000 net worth. But, and that's a big part of it, I think, getting in the right network. And that's why I've created the Simple Passive Cashflow Nation and the Mastermind. But I guess, Brady, once you are in the right room, what would some tips on someone who is a little socially awkward from a technical background to get out of their comfort zone and intermingle and put their best face forward?
My main advice is to play to your strengths, which might sound a little confusing, perhaps to somebody who is very heavily introverted. But I had mentioned this earlier in the episode where we were talking about introverts having particular empathy that even extroverts do not possess. Because an extrovert can be a social butterfly and flit around the room and chit-chat with everybody, and they look like the life of the party. And somebody who is heavily introverted not only will feel envious looking at that example, but feel lacking, like they can't do that. And that is doing an apples and oranges comparison. You look at somebody that's social butterflying around the room and you go, I can't do that. And you start to shut yourself down and you don't go up and talk to anybody. That is what we end up seeing in those kinds of situations. But that's not your strength. Your strength is, as an introvert, for example, is not your ability to flip between 20 different conversations in 10 minutes. Your strength is really deeply understanding one conversation, being able to really tap into another person. And that is something the extrovert can't pull off. The extrovert usually gets bored too easily and flits to the next conversation. You have a much stronger opportunity for connection, rapport, and building a strong ally in that room than even the extrovert can do. The extrovert could collect 15, 20 different business cards and not necessarily have any real follow through with any of them. But the introvert could get one card, maybe two, that actually goes somewhere because there was a deeper, meaningful connection that was happening. It takes a courage to do that. You have to get up the nerve to come up and talk to somebody, but devote yourself to that. Realize that your strength is to be able to understand this other person and make an ally.
Yeah, I think in our group, I would say 80% of the people are introverts. So I would say at least you got a pretty good shot of talking to somebody who is glad that you're talking to them if you make the first move. Hmm. And then something else that kind of came to mind was, you know, when I go to conferences, industry events, and I make a point to go more deep into one or a few people than to run around the room and waste my business cards. And it's funny because everybody sees those people fluttering around the room. And you also see this in the virtual setting today when there's not as many in-person events. I see it. I see it on my Facebook feed. I know you guys are out there. You guys are in every single Facebook group out there. I know because I am too, and Facebook alerts me. And I see those type of people, it's the cheap, easy, free folks who they flutter around to every single group, ask a question, and they're transitory to all these groups, but they're not a resident of any one or two. And I think I know the truth is those people, they never really get anywhere. Plus they never reinvest their money into one group of people, time and money-wise. I think that's how it recreates itself in the virtual world that we also, unfortunately, are living into.
And there's also a corollary. It's a little bit of a cliche, but it's an interesting mental trick that I would recommend to somebody, because whether it's in a virtual Zoom call where there's open breakout rooms and you have to pick a breakout room to go into or something like that, or you get assigned to a breakout room, or even if we think about an in-person thing and you've got 15 people lined up against the wall and nobody's talking because everybody's nervous. Just remember, and this is true, if you're the one that has the courage to go up and actually initiate the conversation, you're scared as all hell of how that's going to go. But in that instant that you're doing the approaching to somebody else, in that moment, they're more afraid of you than you are of them. That's the cliche. And by having that leap of faith, that courage to actually be the one to go up and initiate, you have now proven you're just ever so slightly less afraid of this conversation than the person who didn't get that courage up to do it. And as a result, you're almost guaranteed to actually have a really good conversation because they're just happy that you started it.
Yeah. And I think a great opening pickup line is like, hey, I'm new here. I'm still trying to learn. yeah, tell me about yourself, and I'm interested in learning too. It's rare that you find people that don't have that ego or that I'm all knowing. I'm the best doctor, I'm the best dentist, I'm the best IT guy. I know everything. But yeah, so Brady runs a pretty good boot camp specifically surrounding progressing your career and all these little social tweaks. Great. I really like the group coaching setting that you do too. We do this in the incubator group ourselves, but it's probably the most best way you're going to be able to get some people around you and that as close to one-on-one coaching without the price that you can get. And it's all virtual, right? So I know you started with the pandemic, but you guys, what's the URL, Brady, if people want to get a hold of you or reach out to learn more?
My website is infinitech.ninja. So infinitech.ninja. And the name was created around the idea that we are helping techs, particularly, whether we're talking IT or programmers and developers, if you're in the tech industry, and that we have infinite potential, but we just need to untap it. So Infinitech. And then I call our graduates from the bootcamp tech ninjas, because there's a resiliency and a versatility and agility to the mindset that I coach on these concepts that really prepares people to face down just about anything, because we're really tapping into our personal power and not getting bogged down by what we can't control.
And I've spoken about this before, this concept of binary skill sets that are contrasting. It's like the 7-footer in basketball that can also dribble and shoot, or the super strong guy who's also fast. If you're an introvert out there and you shut up and actually listen to people, it's your normal tendency, but you're also able to navigate social norms, you become one of these rock stars and gunslingers in the world, and you just rise above everybody else in career and networking. And it's because it's rare, that binary skill sets is rare, and it's something that I've worked on myself, because you ask anybody who knows me, I'm one of the most socially awkward people in the world, but I kind of work on it. But that's really how I've been able to work on all these business development, relationships, partnerships, and find and build the group. And Brady will call me, says I'm confident. But yeah, because I put in the effing work, and that's what I encourage everybody else should be doing. Right? Jump, do the boot camp. I would definitely recommend it.
And I liked something else that you mentioned in there, like the introvert who can start a conversation and actually communicate effectively with another person does so much more powerfully and meaningfully than the extrovert. And part of that is because of what you had mentioned about listening. We tend to, as introverts, I count myself among them, shut up and listen more than we want to talk necessarily. But the extrovert, by the opposite end of the spectrum, can't wait to get in their piece. So they're not necessarily actively listening. So you get that game of telephone that happens almost in that social butterfly, where they're not even necessarily understanding what the other person just said because they were brushing up for their next statement. The introvert is actually paying attention and listening to the content and gets closer to the spirit of what was trying to be communicated. So that's how you establish those allies. Nothing feels better than being listened to. And it makes you want to know this person some more. And if you're doing that for business, you're more likely to do business together.
All right. Again, the URL infinitech.ninja. And remember, use these skills when you guys are in our mastermind groups. And we're going to be doing the retreat this year virtually. It'll be the bubble, the virtual bubble this year. But use these skills, bring your ego down, be open, be the first person to show weakness and say you don't know anything, is what I'd say. But thanks, Brady. Really appreciate it, man.
The proceeding is not tax, legal, or investment advice, nor an offer to sell securities or investment products. Always make informed decisions with professional guidance. Get educated and surround yourself with a community at thewealthelevator.com/club.